Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast, Parenting the Anxious Generation. So much anxiety living in our culture, in our lives, in our bones, in our moment. How do we parent an anxious generation? How do we know what anxiety is? How do we know how to identify it in our kids? What are the active tools that we need to use? What biblically does the Bible say about anxiety as a whole? And also, how do we deal with it? That's what we're getting into today. I'm really excited about
it. Still a light, easy topic.
This is your topic. This is the one you wanted to talk about.
No landmines we could step on.
Well, you and I specifically have a lot of passion about this.
Yes,
also wanted to say, last week we announced a very fun thing, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that episode or hear more about what this is simply a 31-day prayer devotional for you to specifically have written prayers over your kids. It's a verse, it's a quote, and it's a written prayer with different topics every single day. And we are just offering this to anybody that wants to partner with us financially, anyone that gives $25 a month or more. We want to send this as a thank you. This is both to resource you, but to also help the ever-growing ministry of Intentional. And this is a way to partner and become a legacy builder. That's what our monthly givers are, is our legacy builders. And we'd like to invite you to be a part of it. So if you hadn't heard about that, that is going on. That's happening. You can click the link in the show notes. You can go to intentionalparents.org and you can look at the prayer devotional there and learn all you need. You can pick up your copy there. That's how that works. But parenting the anxious generation, honey, why don't you set us up? I think you did a brilliant job with setting all this up and I'm excited for this conversation, but you already said it. Yeah. There's a lot of different things to nuance today. And so why don't you take us?
Well, I feel like right out the gate, as is obvious, we need to state the obvious that we are not medical practitioners.
What?
That we cannot give medical advice or diagnose, as much as my sweet husband tells me I'm always trying to diagnose people with things.
You're trying to diagnose me with things. I don't care if you diagnose other people. It's when you try to diagnose me and I don't always love that.
Yeah. So we won't be doing that today. So that's important to say. And we are taking today, we're taking the angle of what can we do as parents to help our kids? Because really, it is our job to be able to identify if our kid is struggling with anxiety and to give them tools when they're young so that it doesn't have to take over their life as an adult. It's a gift we can give our kids.
And anxiety is very sneaky.
It is very sneaky. We're going to talk about that, of how it can show up. And a little background, did we ever think we would be talking about this? No. But we have three of our four kids who... I think I can probably safely say four of them struggle with anxiety. Some of them much more intensely than others. Two, actually, that we've needed significant help because of their struggle with anxiety. And so we are not experts in this area, but we are daily practitioners and we have had to seep ourselves in this topic for years now. And we've had to get a lot of help because... Mm-hmm. We've needed to for the sake of our kids. And so we've had a lot of experts pouring into our lives, both personally, like actually meeting with them and through books and through resources, have had to learn a lot about this. So,
and classes.
Yes, and classes.
And lots of different classes we've taken.
And so we're going to share some of what we've learned through all the experts who have helped us. And through having to actually practice it in our home on a daily basis.
Which is a very different thing, by the way. Meaning you have the ideals of the practitioners or those who say, this is what it should look like. But then how do you fit that in with your own kids and their specific needs when they're like, yeah. Hey, belly breaths are great. And your kid's like, I'm not breathing no matter what. I'm going to hold my breath. You're like, all right, pass out if you want. Like we have those dynamics too.
Absolutely. We do. And the reality is why this is so important and why I hope anybody who follows the podcast listens to this. Some of you are going to see that title and be like, oh my gosh, I need that. My kid's so anxious. Others of you are going to be like, my kid's not anxious at all. I don't need to listen to that. Mm-hmm. And maybe your kid is, and you just haven't noticed it yet. Or maybe one of your kids will be at one point. So mm-hmm. the reality is that one in eight kids will be diagnosed with an actual anxiety disorder. But we all know and we all feel, and research is coming out left and right, that stat is actually much higher. Because think about all the kids that are never going to actually be in a psychiatrist's office being clinically diagnosed, mm-hmm. but will wrestle with anxiety their whole life. Mm-hmm. Think about you, the listener. Maybe you've never had a psychiatrist say, you have generalized anxiety disorder, but you know you wrestle anxiety every single day. And mm-hmm. that is just part of the world that we live in. I think in many ways it always has been, and we didn't have language for it. But we all know and we all feel that it is a problem that has grown worse over time. It's not a new problem, but it is something that I think has grown worse over time. And we have this ability as parents, and we're seeing it firsthand in our own kids' lives, of being able to significantly help our kids. We can't protect them from feeling anxious. And that's, we're going to get into that. That actually is not helpful. But we can, starting at a really young age, help them build tools and rhythms to face their anxiety and mm-hmm. to really conquer parts of it and at least have tools to know what to do as they feel it as they get older. Mm-hmm. And so it's this great like weight and responsibility, and it is possible. We've seen it firsthand. Really what started us on even beginning to learn about this was our daughter Scarlett, and she's very open about her anxiety. She's very okay with us telling stories about it. Because she's kind of proud of it, because she's proud of how far she's come. But when she was 8, she was so anxious. We felt like we had no tools. We didn't understand what was happening. We saw her being so greatly limited in her life. And we needed help. And mm-hmm. so that's actually how we met Sally, who's been on the podcast over and over. Mm-hmm. We got her name from a friend and we started taking Scarlett simply because she was so anxious. There were a lot of things she couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And it revolutionized her life, not just the therapy, but in us as her parents, understanding what was happening, understanding how to help her, and understanding that it wasn't just that she needed a therapist to help her. We as her parents needed a therapist to help us help her, because with your kids, you parents really are the greatest tool for help for your kids and the things that they struggle with. And oftentimes we need somebody to educate us so that we can know what's helpful, what's not, and begin that process. But for us, that's how we met Sally, was because mm-hmm. we had that great need. It's where it started for us and then has grown, and we've needed a lot more help.
We need a lot more. But there is, I think it's also, as we're talking, there's biblical foundation for this. So, yeah. There's tons of scripture. Do not fear is the most common command in scripture. And I think we have to be really careful with that one, because yes, that's a command, but that doesn't mean don't feel anxious, because it doesn't work that way. So I think do not fear is one part of this, but it is not as simple as just saying, well, just don't have anxiety about it. Just don't worry. Because mm-hmm. That's an answer of the naive or someone that just doesn't understand how the brain works or how anxiety actually works. That's just a cop-out answer to make the person who's feeling uncomfortable by someone else's anxiety feel better about it.
Yeah.
And so do not fear is, yes, a responsibility to learn how do we step into a place that we don't experience anxiety controlling and ruling over our lives. John Ortberg talks about that as the cold comfort zone. He talked about that in this book. I know I've read some of it. You've read more of it than I have, but steps. I was supposed to read a quote. Am I supposed to read that?
Yeah. Before you read that quote, that command in the scriptures, do not fear, is almost always accompanied with do not fear, go do the thing that scares you. And I think we miss that.
Yeah,
we say all the time, well, do not fear. I'm just not supposed to fear. Well, we all know that doesn't actually work.
Mm-hmm.
But if you actually look at it in the scriptures and you read the stories of the Bible over and over and over again, God says, do not fear. He says that specifically and personally to the person who is scared. And then he calls them to go do the scary thing, which, as we're going to unpack here a little bit, is actually how we face our anxiety mm-hmm. and how it loses its grip on us. But think of Moses, who was terrified, who was like, I can't go talk to these people. I can't even speak clearly. Like, he's terrified. He doesn't want to go do it. And God says, do not be afraid, Moses. Now go confront Pharaoh. Think of Elijah. He says, do not be afraid, Elijah. Now go confront and face Jezebel. You think of Joseph, when he's scared to proceed in marriage with Mary because of all that will mean for his reputation and for hers. And he has the dream. Do not be afraid. Now go marry her. And I think that's important to note is that the command is do not fear. The call is go do the thing that scares you. And the promise is that God will be with you.
That's really well said.
That is what we get to model and teach our kids. And we're going to unpack, like, how do we do that? But I love the quote you're about to read from John Ortberg. And think of your kids and how much you want to comfort them and protect them from the things that scare them. But that's not always helpful.
No, it's not. He says, John Ortberg here, great human. When we don't take action, we often call this staying in our comfort zone. But that's a bad name for it. It's really the cold comfort zone, because missing out on life and calling and courage is actually life draining and not life giving. I couldn't agree more. And when we take action, we feel a surge of relief and power and God with us. Often, the fears we felt in the cold comfort zone don't trouble us nearly as much when we're moving directly towards them. And then he just asks the question, so what are you afraid of? And I think that's such a, so many beautiful things. But yes, we have to move towards it. It's a big part. So why don't you help us understand, and why don't we talk about really quick, just understanding anxiety as a whole, because I think, again, there's a lot of people that will spit all sorts of knowledge about this. We are not coming to try to educate you on something that we're experts on. Again, we're not, but we are practitioners of learning how to do this in our own home. And so we are telling you, like, in real time, here's what we've experienced. Here's been our struggle and our pain points. And so we're not trying to say, hey, you don't know about anxiety. Some of you listening are going to know far more about it than we are.
Mm-hmm.
But we can tell you how it's impacted our life and home and how we've had to try to navigate helping our kids through it and ourselves through it. And I'm telling you, it is more complex. The deeper you dig, you're like, whoa, I didn't realize how deep this was, how sneaky it was. Mm-hmm. So let's understand a little bit more about this.
Yeah. Anxiety is not always a bad thing. That's a really important thing that we all need to remember and know. We need anxiety to do certain tasks and to accomplish certain things. The class we took on parenting kids with anxiety was like a group therapy, 8-week class type of thing. It was so incredibly helpful. And the person teaching it has her PhD. And she said, I could never have gotten my PhD without a certain level of anxiety. I needed a certain level of anxiety to push me to finish it, to write all that I needed to write, and to actually be able to accomplish that. If you think of, like, skydiving, which I will never do because my anxiety about it would be far too high. But even if you want to do it and you decide to do it, having anxiety about skydiving is a healthy, normal response. And it might be that anxiety that makes you actually be able to do that thing.
So what does it say when you can, like, with very little thought, just jump out of a plane? Because I feel like I would just, I would not even a thing. I'd do it in a second. I haven't done it.
I don't know what that says about you.
No, I don't, that's what I mean. I'm like, I'm actually a little concerned. Like, am I so disconnected? Maybe that's actually probably, disassociation is big for me.
Yeah,
so let's keep going.
Maybe.
So
disassociating from your anxiety about jumping out of the plane.
Sure.
I don't know.
Got to turn it off.
But anxiety becomes a problem when it becomes out of hand and tries too much to be helpful, to try to keep us safe from things that we don't actually need to be kept safe from. So, like, an example is if there's a fire alarm going off every 10 seconds screaming fire, but really all you're doing is making dinner. the stove's on. There's no actual fire that is of danger, but your brain is telling you, this is a fire, this is a problem, this is a problem. But in reality, it's, you are safe. It is a daily thing that needs to happen. It's not actually a fire. And so that's how it can be so sneaky, is because we can be having that fire alarm going off in our minds, or our kids can, but we're actually okay. And we just can't see that it's okay. And really, our anxiety is trying to help us. My absolute favorite scene in Inside Out 2, and my kids are so sick of me quoting it because I quote it all the time, is when, you know, all the different parts, because it's internal family systems. It's the best movies ever, actually. I love Inside Out.
I did not like that movie. I liked the message of it, but it's very chaotic.
Yes. But Inside Out 2, they introduce this new character, and its name is Anxiety.
So, yes.
Well, and it's introduced in like an adolescent brain. But this Anxiety character shows up, and...
Are you kidding? You're explaining this like nobody knows. Everybody has seen this. Their kids have seen this. So.
Well, yes, but the part, like their hair is frazzled. They're holding all these shopping bags, and they hold up the bags, and she, I think it's a she, comes right up and goes, here to help. And that's exactly what Anxiety does. It's all frazzled. It's all intense. And it's trying to help you.
It's a good visual.
But it's not actually helping you. And one really important thing to know for us parents who are raising children who will likely struggle with anxiety in some way, shape, or form, is that anxiety gets worse over time without support or intervention. It doesn't just go away. We don't just naturally grow out of it. There are certain things we do grow out of, mature out of, our brain develops out of. Anxiety is not one of those things. If left untreated, undealt with, especially if it's like a significant part of your child's life, it will get worse over time. It will not get better. And we've seen, I feel like we've seen both spectrums in our house recently with our daughter, Scarlett, who had intervention starting at 8. We've seen it get a lot better over time. She still, anxiety is a huge demon for her, but she faces it left and right. Just this week, she's doing something really hard that she never would have been able to do a couple years ago. She's anxious as can be, but she is determined that she's still going to do it. A couple years ago, she couldn't have done that.
It would have stopped her,
With our daughter, Birdie, who we actually went to the class for because she significantly struggles with anxiety. It was not obvious until probably like a year ago that we recognized, oh my gosh, she is like severely anxious. And right now it's getting worse before it gets better. So we're right in the thick of it with helping her face her anxiety and giving her tools. But I think that's important that we have to have that framework as parents, is it doesn't go away over time. It actually gets worse. And there's a lot we can do to help, which we're going to get into. But I think it's important to highlight, and I think we both resonate with each of these, is that there are oftentimes two like parental responses to our kids' anxiety. These aren't like parenting styles, like a style in which you deal with things with your kids. They're really just our responses that are most common to our kids' anxiety. They're demanding and protecting. So let's talk about demanding first. And usually that looks like, it's not conscious, but demanding that our kids don't feel anxious or don't act as if they feel anxious, like a shutting it down. You don't need to be scared. Or sometimes
I don't like this one.
It doesn't have to be harsh. Sometimes it can just be, you don't need to be afraid.
I don't like this one.
Why don't you like this one?
This is what I do and I hate it. Oh, but I also was raised this way in so many ways. And so I feel like to turn that off is so hard. I mean, it's so hard to be like, just don't be scared.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound, when you're in a calm place, it sounds so silly. And then at the very same time, it's so hard because that's my natural reaction is to just be like, hey, just stop. Like, stop feeling anxious. Don't, you know, it never, ever works, but it is the most natural thing I go to.
And these are what I'm unlearning. Highlighting these two areas is not to shame. It's really just to identify, like, which one do you lean to?
Oh, I'm identifying right now.
Yeah, exactly. And they're natural human responses because our kids' discomfort makes us uncomfortable.
Yeah, big time.
And big time. We have different responses to that, rescuing them, shutting it down, you know, just really to ease our own anxiety. But that demanding, like leaning towards the demanding end of things over time really does lead to anger and frustration and mm-hmm. distance from your kids because they don't feel seen and they're not actually supported in that moment. Sure. We're not actually giving them any tools when we do that.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is like the opposite end of the spectrum and could be seen as really good, but mm-hmm. actually has a lot of problems just as much as being demanding is protecting.
Mm-hmm.
Wanting our kids not to experience the distress that comes when they feel anxiety and allowing them or even helping them escape situations that make them feel anxious. And this one's tricky because as a good-hearted parent, we want to protect our kids. We mm-hmm. don't want them to feel discomfort. That's because you're a good parent. But if we don't understand where the discomfort is coming from and we don't understand anxiety,
mm-hmm.
over time, that actually sends the message to their brain that I, as the parent, I don't believe that you're safe. I believe you do need to avoid this to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe you can do it. And that's like one of the worst things.
But that's so subtle because you think you're just, you know, aiding your kid by saying, oh, I'm going to walk you to class every day. Or I'm going to do, you know, whatever the thing, very normal thing. A very yeah. normal everyday thing.
I'm going to lay with you all the way until you fall asleep every yeah, night.
That is where it becomes so sneaky because most people that are, all the families that were in the class that we were in were all very well-meaning, very thoughtful, very mm-hmm. good parents. Actually, in many parts, we are the worst types to actually aid the anxiety. She was even talking about this. She's like, we end up, because we want to help our kids. We yeah. want to give them a leg up, but it's not on purpose.
Yeah.
We're unintentionally in many ways giving into their anxiety because we want to help. And then it shows up in all these sneaky ways. So when they're like, I really don't want to, like when your kid is demanding something or asking for something that literally disrupts the whole family and the whole family has to bend for that one person's need, you have got to stop and go, hey, that actually might be something more than just a preference.
Mm-hmm.
That is potentially anxiety. And what's interesting, I see this for a lot of families, you yourself maybe haven't identified your own anxiety. So you call it normal.
Yeah.
They call it normal because it's the water that you, it's the air you breathe, it's the water you swim in. So mm-hmm. you don't notice it. At the very same time, it is becoming something that doesn't aid them and yeah. causes all of this control that is not realistic that
yeah.
you're giving them out of help, but honestly, it's a disservice in the long run.
Yeah. And we're going to talk actually further about that in a minute here, but
we want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me, God says, and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
Before we do, maybe just let's talk for a minute about what anxiety can look like.
Yeah, like because, knowing the signs.
Yeah, I think I used to think that anxiety looked like out loud worry. Like catastrophizing.
Which it can.
Which it absolutely can. And for one of our kids, it does look like that. Always thinking of the worst case scenario.
Mm.
We were at a lake once, and I remember, Scarlett, this was years ago. We were camping at the lake, in these cabins. And we had this beautiful view of the lake. And Scarlett was genuinely worried that there would be a tsunami. And I had to walk her through that, talk her through that. Like her anxiety was very obvious. But it's the more sneaky ones that I didn't recognize for a long time were anxiety. And several of my kids exhibit these. It can look like control. And even for the ones that worry out loud, it often looks like control. Wanting mm-hmm. to know every detail of the schedule. Wanting to have input of every detail of the schedule. Needing to know what time everything's happening, but they're asking it in a persistent way, like they have to know it. They can't mm-hmm. not know it.
Yep.
Or maybe they're micromanaging you. Hey, you should probably get your shoes on. We need to be there on time. Or, hey, you know, yeah, like,
trust me,
keeping an eye out for those things. It can look like perfectionism. It can look like avoidance. This is a big one. The kids that we think are lazy, we can be so hard on them. They're just not remembering to do things. They're just not getting themselves up out the door. They're just not turning in the job application or whatever it might be.
Using a real life example.
Hey,
from
I was not going to say that's a real life example.
I'm just laughing because you're using.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes.
But asking those kids questions like, hey, are you avoiding this thing because you're possibly anxious, feeling anxious? It can look like many the of us know this. Stuff, physical symptoms, headaches, stomach aches, huge one. Nail biting. This is a big one for Birdie. She has almost no nails right now because when she's really anxious, she chews on her fingers. It can look like, this is another sneaky one, asking the same question over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure you're going to be there on time to pick me up? What time are you going to be there? Or asking the plan over and over and over again. This one was so sneaky. We didn't even realize this was a major issue for one of our kids until the first time a behavioral therapist was in our house, our first session. And at the end, she just said, you are answering her questions way too many times. We're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, we
and she so highlighted, she's asking you the same question over and over and over again. And then she had to coach us, you need to give her two times that she can ask the question. You can ask me twice. And after you've asked me twice, I'm going to say asked and answered. You asked that question. I gave you the answer. I'm not going to answer it again.
Yep.
Because us answering the same question over and over again
is not
was
helpful.
Us accommodating that anxiety. So those are just, there's more, but I think those are some of the things we need to be
just
watch for. And maybe if one of those things resonated where you're like, oh my gosh, my kid does that one, just start to notice and start to ask them questions if they're old enough. Like, hey, are you feeling kind of anxious right now? And then you might have to peel back the layers, ask them some of the physical symptoms, ask them, because it might take them a while to connect that they're actually worrying about something.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part. So those are the signs. Let's talk about what we can do. Because I think at the end of the day, I'll take the first one if that's okay.
Yeah,
I think you have to educate yourself. You have to learn about anxiety. You have to learn what it is, how it shows up. And this isn't a fun one to learn about. I don't know about you, but like, I'm not like eagerly wanting to learn about anxiety. Some people like love this stuff, but I mean that in the sense of like, you can't pretend that it doesn't exist. There's a whole generation, unfortunately, that kind of even would question if anxiety is real because I didn't struggle with anxiety. And at the end of the day, it is because your whole life has been built around your anxiety and you don't even see it because the way you built your life was a way to actually cope with all the different things that you feel. You didn't have language for it. That's understandable. There's no shade on that, but dismissing it as a thing now that there is language is not helpful. So you have to educate yourself in a big way on that. And you have to actually take some time to like logically explain to your anxious kids that they don't need, like when you try to logically explain that they don't ever need to be anxious, it's not going to help. They need tools. They need to understand how to do it. So you have to educate yourself.
Yeah. And then second one, this is huge. We touched on this a little bit already, but we have to notice where we are accommodating their anxiety and change course. And so what that means is kind of what we talked about at the beginning with the protecting parent, where we are either aiding our kids in escaping the thing that makes them feel anxious by allowing them to not do it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is tricky waters here because there might be some that would listen that say, yes, I'm going to make my kid play a sport even though they hate it because it's good for them and it's character building. I'm not talking about that. Like there is a world in which your kid might not actually be ready for something or they just might not like something.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about like the things that are impacting your everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of those things, a huge one is sleep. This was big for us. We had some kids sleeping in our room for a very long period of time because of anxiety and it took a long time to work through it. They are now sleeping in their room. Praise Jesus.
Not in our bed, just in our room. Both were just hard though. Both were just hard.
So it might be anxiety around sleep. It might be anxiety, like separation anxiety about going to school or going to a friend's house or doing something without you, things like that. So not, and you know, you have wisdom into and discernment into your kid's life of what they are actually capable of. But noticing the areas where you are allowing them to not do something because they feel anxious about it, or where you are giving them too much help, where it's developmentally appropriate for them to be doing something on their own with your support and you present, but without your help. So, and again, this can be sneaky. Like in this class we took, one of the situations was it was a 7-year-old who couldn't brush his own teeth. His mom had to do it because he was anxious that he wouldn't do a good enough job. So the thing she brought that she wanted to really change is she's like, he's 7. I want to be able to brush his own teeth. Mm-hmm. You know, so some of these are sneaky things, but you're looking for the root. Is there anxiety behind the thing that my kid still needs help with or is terrified to do on their own? Or maybe I am staying in the school parking lot for a half hour because that makes my kid feel better. Or you know what the things are. You're already, as I'm talking, able to identify what those things are. But what are you as a parent accommodating and making happen so that your kid doesn't have to feel those feelings of discomfort? Or maybe you don't have to face your feelings of discomfort when they feel comfortable. And the reality is when we let them avoid those things, we're sending their brain the message that I don't believe you can do it and that you're not safe.
Mm-hmm.
That is the last thing we want to be doing. We want to be sending the message that I'm here for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where it's so tricky for us well-meaning, good-hearted parents. But it's that idea of like when our kids are young and they're first around water, we put floaties on them, like those puddle jumper things. Our kids always call them floaties, to keep them safe because we don't want them to drown. That's good. That's a good thing. But if they use them forever, they will never learn to swim without them.
Yeah,
they'll actually be embarrassed later and unsafe around water because they won't learn how to swim.
I would just love to see our 16-year-old son trying to put one of those on.
I guarantee you they make an adult one somewhere.
Sure. So I think, because we have a lot more to cover, we have to notice where we're accommodating. We have to notice like where are those places where you can actually relieve and give some space and some permission to them to say, no, you can do this. And I mean, again, this is a learning curve. We're telling you things that take a long time to live out. That first time you might tell them like, what are you talking about? You've always done this. Like you have to do it, right?
Yeah.
Even that is anxiety. Like, whoa, you're taking away the thing that I've used to deal with my anxiety. You're not going to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Like that's massive. And so you have to, that's calculated. And again, this is where this is not a master class. This is a conversation to get you curious, to help you understand, to take you to further education, to help you get dive deep. This conversation today that you're listening to is not going to be the end all be all to make sure that like you thread this needle, but it is a conversation to help you be aware. So
let's talk about, I'd put it in the next section, but makes most sense to go here now. If you are recognizing you're accommodating, what can you do instead now today? You're saying, and it's really important to highlight, you can't just rip off the Band-Aid and say, I'm not going to accommodate anywhere. Like that's too much too fast for your kid. If this has been a regular thing that you're letting them avoid, or you're letting them sleep in your room, or you're falling asleep with them at night, for example, if it's around sleep, you can't just withdraw everything all at once. You will overload them with anxiety.
Mm.
You have to titrate it in a little bit. But
you said something, hold on. I remember because what you just said, you breezed up. I know we have something else to say, which is very important, but you just said something that I think is easy to miss and was the big like aha light bulb moment for me personally.
Yeah.
I asked the question in the class like, okay, if we have one of our kids sleeping in our room because they're scared to sleep on their own, then what are we to do? Like, can we just say, hey, yeah, go to sleep. So I'm going to sleep. Like, go in your room, deal with it. Like, what are we to do? She goes, oh, no. You have to have the right dosage. And she used the word, this medical word that you would apply for medication in the same frame as dealing with and processing through the process of their anxiety. And so I think that's an important phrase. You can't just do 100% of the dosage if you need to titrate up. You have to start slow and build up.
Yeah.
And that's a really important factor to not cause more harm unintentionally.
Yes.
And I, you know, we were at the space where like, well, we'll just do whatever works. If that's what works, you know, like we were down to do anything in the sense of like, as long as it was going to help. But once she said, no, this is like medication, it just finally turned on for me in a way. I was like, oh,
yeah,
this is so different.
And that's compassion, right?
Yeah.
Like we're having compassion, not just, okay, I'm done with this. We're having compassion on and meeting them where they actually are, but leading them up to where we know they can get and we mm-hmm. know they mm-hmm. want to be in the long run. And so what you can start with today is by acknowledging to them, they're called supportive statements, but by you saying, like, let's take the example of sleep. By you acknowledging to your kid at bedtime, hey, I just want you to know that I notice that sleep is really scary to you. Like the whole process, falling to sleep, the thought of being alone, that makes you feel really anxious. Like acknowledging that. And then what you say next is really important. But I believe that you can do it and that you are brave and that you can sleep on your own. I know you can. That's actually how they feel support. Not by, hey, I see that you're really scared. You can just sleep in my room every night. Or I'm going to lay with you till you fall asleep every night. But really starting to build in these regular things we say to them when we notice that they're feeling anxious. If we're able to say, hey, I'm seeing that you're feeling really anxious about that. I want you to know, I believe that you're really brave and you can do really hard things. You're both helping them notice that they feel anxious and you're also communicating to them, hey, I see you and I see that you are trying to put on a good face or I see that you're terrified or whatever it might be. But hey, I also believe in you. You don't believe that you can do it right now, but I know there's no actual scary monster mm-hmm. under the bed. Like mm-hmm. we don't have to say that out loud, but like we do know that as their parents. And I think that's tying back to God saying over and over again, do not fear, for I am with you. If you don't need to be afraid or discouraged because I'm going to go with you in Joshua 1. That is what we are doing as a parent. We're saying like, hey, I see your fear, but here, I know actually that there's nothing under the bed. I know that you're going to be okay walking into school. I know, like, because we have a view that our kid doesn't mm-hmm. have in that moment. And it's not that we have to say that, hey, like, I know you're going to be fine, but really saying, I believe in you. Like, I support you. I see you. That may not feel like enough and like it's going to move the needle on something. But if you do that over and over and over again, your kid starts to believe in themselves. Like they start to believe, okay, like, hey,
I can do it.
The person who's closest to me really does believe in me and does believe I can do it. And then as you start to pull back some of the ways you're accommodating, they also know that means like, hey, I'm not going to let you out of this completely yeah. because I love you, but I'm right here with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is something you can start today. Mm-hmm. Even if you're still needing to accommodate a little bit longer or really slowly pull back those accommodations, that needs to be a regular thing we say to them. I see you. I see the fear. And here's what else I see in you. The part Absolutely, of you that you can't yeah. see right now. But you got to trust me. I see this in you.
Well, let's maybe the scripture. I'd yeah. love to read that really quick.
Yeah.
Isaiah 41:10. I mean, it just highlights this perfectly. So do not fear. I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. This is so exactly what you're talking about. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. He's with you. See, here's why you don't have to fear. I'm with you. I'm going to strengthen you. I'm going to help you. As parents, supportive statements are like that. Yes. They're strengthening them. Yes. They're giving your kids strength to believe like, hey, you can actually do this. We talked about this in just the most recent past episode on prayer about this idea that your child will become who you tell them you see them becoming. You don't have to say, you're never anxious. You're not going to be anxious. That's not going to work. But when you're supportive and say, you know, I actually do believe that you can do this. And I know it's hard, but you can do hard things.
Yeah.
And I think having that almost resolve to tell them that, believe that from a place of knowing who they really are. And I mean, don't lie to them. If you really are like, man, I don't think they can do this, but you're like, you can do it. Like, that's not helpful. That mm-hmm. that's just going to crush them. But if you really think so, and they're just questioning it, then I think you should say it. I think you need to say it.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it.
Yeah. And then if you are like, okay, I want to make a change in how I'm accommodating or enabling the anxiety, if they're old enough, if they're not teeny tiny, tell them, but make it about you as the parent, not you're bad. You are way too anxious about this silly thing. That's not the language we want to use. We put it on us. Hey, I realize I've been accidentally sending you the message that you can't sleep in your bed on your own. By me laying with you every night, I'm kind of telling you, I don't think you can do it. But that's not actually true. I know you can do it and I know that you're safe. So starting tomorrow or starting in 3 days or whatever, I'm going to lay with you for 10 minutes and then I'm going to get up. Like you pick something that you feel like your kid can handle.
You pick for time frame.
Yeah.
Pick
for 1 week, I'm going to lay with you for 10 minutes. And then, we're just using the sleep example. It could be totally something else. Food is one. It's a lot more complicated.
Food is very big.
I feel like we could do a whole episode just on that. That's a tricky one and harder. It will take longer. But you pick what you're going to stop doing and you let them know. I'm going to begin to stop doing this. And this is what it's going to look like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it'll take some trial and error. It will take some fortitude on your part because they will be uncomfortable. But over time, they will actually become much more courageous. They will be much less uncomfortable. I think that has been something that has been really transformative for us is to recognize, if I can slowly stop accommodating, I can actually enable my kid to gain some incredible ground in their anxiety. We have seen this firsthand with our most anxious kid. The ground that Birdie has gained and the things that she couldn't do a year ago that she can now do because of the help we've got in this area of recognizing where we were accommodating and slowly pulling it back has just been immense. And I've seen, even though she can't fully articulate it with how she's wired and how her brain works, I've seen her own courage and her own confidence grow in recognizing, I can do the really hard thing and it sucks and I hate it, but I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a beautiful gift to get to watch.
It absolutely is.
Yeah. So a few more just practical things of ways that we can show them support and actually help them. We talked a lot about accommodating and the supportive statements. That's huge. Obvious, but needs to be said, is get help.
Mm-hmm.
If this is like a big deal and you have access to any sort of help, get it. And I think the good thing, it can be really difficult to find a therapist that takes your insurance, that knows Jesus, that is a really good fit on a deep emotional level. I think with anxiety in our kids specifically, it's very important that it's a Jesus-loving therapist. That's always important. But this type of work, because it's more the parent, it's more the therapist helping the parent help the kids.
Yeah.
There's a lot of therapists that can help in this way. There's even a lot of online therapists. There's online groups. There's a lot of great books. Sissy Goff, Raising Worry-Free Girls is a great one. And it not even just to girls, but there's a lot in there. Read The Anxious Generation to understand is happening. All of these are forms of getting help. Doesn't necessarily have to be a practitioner. It could be a practitioner who wrote something really good. And then really over time, and this isn't something that happens overnight, it is our job to help our kids find tools that work for them. You mentioned at the beginning, obviously there's all the research around deep belly breaths and how they calm our nervous system. They work magically. But when you have a young, totally dysregulated child and you tell them to take deep breaths, 9 times out of 10, there might be the occasional kid that they know it works, they know it helps, and they will say, yes, take deep breaths with me. Most of the time, they will say, absolutely not. So you might have to find and suggest things that they're going to reject at first. It might be going and laying next to the dog. Pets, especially dogs, are incredibly regulating. If you've got a dog, suggest that to your anxious kid. Why don't you go take the dog on a walk? That's why we have a dog. It might be reading a book for some. That might like calm the brain down, calm the nervous system. Might be going on a walk or going on a run or working out for a teenager. It might be talking with a friend, letting a friend into, hey, I'm feeling really anxious. I just need somebody to talk to. another funny practical one, but works, is drinking from a straw. It actually like helps them breathe. And especially if they're drinking something like a smoothie or something like that, maybe it is just smoothie time every time you know your kid is
really anxious. Or if you're really less inclined to smoothies, it is milkshake time.
Exactly. Whatever works, right? But the point is, and maybe none of these things work and it's something else, but helping your child find the things that help. Mm-hmm. And the beauty is they, over time, and over time, I mean over years and years of repetition and practice, they will start to identify these things in themselves and use tools. Like our daughter Scarlett is 13. She tomorrow is getting on a plane early in the morning and going back to Forest Home, the camp, family camp that we were just at. And she's going to be there all week by herself, not by herself, without us, with a bunch of people, but serving at the camp for a week. And she is very anxious about it. She's very excited and she is anxious about feeling anxious. And so the last 3 days we have talked every day, multiple times a day. She has just said, "Mom, I'm so anxious about being anxious. I know I'm going to be okay. I know that this is going to be fun. And I know once I get there, I'm probably going to be okay. But I'm so anxious that I'm going to feel anxious that it's making me feel anxious." And she has used so many of the tools that she's found to be helpful over time. And one of them is bringing it to me and saying, "I'm feeling all of this in my body and I just need to tell somebody."
Yeah.
And I just remind her of truths she already knows, that for her, it's the buildup before something happens, the anxiety she feels before the event happens, that is always the worst for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk really honestly of like, what's the worst thing that could happen? You feel highly anxious the first couple of days of camp and that would suck and you would hate it, but you would be okay. And she agrees. She's like, "Yeah, totally. It would not be fun, but I'm not going to die from it. I'd be okay." So we're having all of those conversations. A couple years ago, she never could have done what she's doing. And she wouldn't have been able to have those types of conversations or use all of her own tools unprompted to be able to calm things down. She's making herself a plan of who she's going to tell, because she won't be able to talk to me, who she's going to talk to when she's there, what she's going to do if she's highly anxious. She's going to give her friend a heads up that if she's really, really quiet, it's probably because she's feeling anxious.
That's, yeah.
So this is the beauty of what happens over time. Now, does Scarlett no longer struggle with anxiety? No.
She has to struggle with it more than ever, but she's dealing with it and we're trying to give her tools. And I think the story that you just shared is, the goal is not to remove anxiety, because I don't think you fully can, but it's to give them the tools to operate in the world so that when a beautiful, exciting opportunity comes like the one that did for her, that the reason she's not going is because of anxiety. It's not because I'm going to be away from you or I might miss you or what if this happens. It's very different. And she's willing and able to actually do the life. And that's what we want to give our kids, is life. And so I know it's a lot to parent the anxious generation, but I think at the very same time, we have this wonderful gift of being able to actually, with God's help, with practitioners, with wisdom, with patience, with the Spirit's help, we can help our kids in a huge way. Any other thoughts?
Two very important words: slow down.
Yeah.
The only way to be able, and I am saying this to myself, I am a fast mover. I hate slowing down. The only way to identify these things in our kids, especially the ones that fly under the radar, the sneaky things that are easy to miss, and the only way to be able to be with our kids is if we slow down and we are with them. And it is faster to accommodate. It is faster to do it for them. It is faster to get frustrated and shut it down. It is faster to avoid. But the only way to actually help them, that idea that the only way is through. And when they are young, they need us to help get through. And then slowly over time, they have the tools to get through with, not by themselves, but with God at their side.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really the end goal. There's a phrase that's commonly said in this world, of anxiety is do it scared. And that doesn't mean white knuckle your way through, just power through the fear, do it anyway. It's come on, anxiety, that little Inside Out character. Come on, come with me. Like you're coming with me, but we're still doing the thing. Mm. And that is what builds that resilience over time. It builds the courage. And as we do that with them, as we point them to Jesus in the midst of their fear, the hope and the goal, and we see it happening with our older kids, is that they invite Jesus into those scared places. Mm-hmm. And that they experience his presence with them in the midst of their fear, that they are able to identify it in themselves and immediately take it to Jesus and say, God, will you be my help? Because that's who you said you are. That's what we want them to be able to do. We can't do that if we don't know it's there ourselves. Mm. And if we have no tools to know how to do that or to trust that he is good in the midst of our fear. Mm-hmm. And so this is a responsibility as we are parents in this time, in this anxious generation, but not in a way of it being a burden. I actually feel like it's been one of the most life-giving things as a parent to watch my kids experience freedom in the midst of their anxiety, not necessarily freedom from it, but freedom to be able to do the things they really want to do, to live the life they want to live, even in the midst of their anxiety, has been one of the most rewarding things as a parent to get to watch. Mm.
Wherever you're at, wherever this hits you today, pray this in. Slow down. Ask questions. Spend time with your partner, your spouse. Sit down. Think this through. And ask God to continue to help you in this process of parenting the anxious generation. And, you know, even in the book that we mentioned at the beginning, Sowing a Hidden Seed, we have a whole day committed to anxiety.
Yeah, so good.
Because it's such a lived place. And so you can learn more about that online. But thank you for listening today.